This is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. We're broadcasting live from the Correctional Education Conference here in Charleston, West Virginia. We have 500 people from not only all over the country, but all over the world, over 500 people who are here to discuss correctional education. As you're well aware, those of us within the criminal justice system, there are entire states that are cutting out their correctional education programs, vocational programs, educational programs, and there are other states cutting back because they feel they have no choice because of budget. So we're here to discuss what's going on throughout the country, new and innovative ways to deliver correctional education programs. The research does seem to be pretty clear that the better prepared they are upon release from the prison systems, the better they do in society, which means the fewer people are victimized by crime and the less money the taxpayers have to put out to put them back into the prison system. So it's a win-win situation for everybody. We're going to be doing a series of five-minute interviews, short interviews. First up is Susan Lockwood. She is the director of juvenile education in a state, Midwest state, and she is also the president of the Council of State Directors for the Correctional Education Association, talking about computer-based learning, computer learning skills. We're talking to William Bryars. He is the from the state of Arkansas. He is a school superintendent for the correctional system there in the state of Arkansas, where they found a 25% difference in recidivism, which is pretty significant. We have Denise Justice. Denise is the CEA past president, and she is a school superintendent for an entire correctional system in the state. She received the award, the President's Award, for her relentless pursuit of correctional education, and she's talking about how to promote correctional education throughout the United States to get everybody to understand that the payoffs can be significant. Steve Stewart is up for the next five-minute interview. He is the executive director of the Correctional Education Association. He's there. His job is to provide an overview, to provide a national perspective as to where we currently are with correctional education. And finally, the last person up is Cindy Borton. She is with a company called North Star Correctional Systems, and she is under contract to the Correctional Education Association. They did a four-year piece of research in terms of school programming, post-secondary education, collegiate education. In essence, the people who they followed up in a two-year time period, one-third of these individuals were enrolled in college and three-quarters were employed, which is a pretty daggone good piece of research or statistics in terms of correctional education programs and their results. So again, short five-minute interviews starting with Susan Lockwood, and we hope you enjoy the program. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. We're broadcasting live today from the Correctional Education Association Conference in Charleston, West Virginia. Quite frankly, ladies and gentlemen, I've been to conferences, correctional conferences throughout the country, and Tim Barnes and I have done our fair share of conference support, and this is one of the largest correctional conferences I've seen. It's principally people who are involved in correctional education, correctional programs, who have an interest in the whole concept of offender reentry, and we're here today talking to a variety of people. First up is Susan Lockwood. She is the Director of Juvenile Education at a Midwest Department of Corrections, but here in her capacity, she is President of the Council of State Directors for the Correctional Education Association. And Susan, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Thank you for having me.
You know, one of the interesting things here, Susan, is this whole concept of long-distance education, correctional education. There's a lot of states out there, their budgets have been decreasing. In fact, one state in particular, California, pretty much wiped out correctional education. So different people are saying, are there ways of doing this differently? Are there new and unique ways using unique technologies to do a better job, to stretch the taxpayer dollar as much as possible? And one of the things that I find interesting in what you're doing is it's GED and computer-based curriculum and testing, where your individuals that are involved in this program, what they're doing is they're learning computer skills. They're learning how to type. They're learning how to word process. For them to be comfortable with computer learning. So this is the process of teaching them as a how to take the GED test, but to do it by computer, right? Correct? Do it by long distance learning.
Correct. That's where we're going to have to drive our curriculum, since we're anticipating the fact that the GED testing service is going to move to that computer application of, or the application of taking the test by computer. And a lot of our offenders are not ready to do that because they lack those skills. Right. So yes, we would have to adjust our curriculum and prepare them in order to do that.
There's a lot of people out there who are still computer illiterate. I mean, whether
absolutely.
You're in prison or out of prison, I mean, there's a lot. I spoke to a gentleman the other day who just absolutely refuses to open a computer keyboard.
Right.
He's well-educated, he's smart, but he's at that age where he's just not familiar with it. So this is a scary thing for some
people. Sure, and a lot of our offenders, especially some of our older offenders who have been incarcerated for long periods of time, are not technology, obviously are not technology literate. And so it can be a barrier for them if they wanted to take a computer-based test.
Right. So this is the whole idea here is to get them comfortable with the computer to the point where they can take their GED test. Now, GED curriculums are an integral part of prison education. We want them to be literate. We want them to know how to read. We want them to get their eighth grade certificate, their reading certificates, or GED certificates. The GED certificate sort of is at the top of that ladder, correct?
Sure. It serves as in our state, it serves as a market signal for whether or not a student is ready or a person is ready to enter post-secondary job training or even an employment situation.
It'll make all the difference in the world in terms of that offender. I mean, if he or she has a GED, he or she suddenly becomes marketable, far more marketable than without it.
Absolutely.
So the concept of doing the computer testing is you have to get them comfortable with the keyboard. You have to get them comfortable with the keystrokes.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of work that goes into that.
Right. And then there's also portions of the test that involve writing an essay. And so the student would need to be able to word process to be able to actually type that in and within the time limit of taking the test.
Now, is there ever the possibility of being instructed, taking your instructions for the GED through a computer or through a long distance
learning?
Is that in the future?
There are lots of companies already that offer different curricula that can be delivered via computer. So that obviously would be something that would, you know, lots of states are looking at to be able to load that software into a lab and let students have that opportunity to improve themselves and grow academically through a lot of the coursework that would be on the computer.
Right. One of the questions that was asked of me is why can't there be somebody sitting in the state of Kansas or and teaching people in Alaska? Why isn't that possible?
That would be possible, although having experienced that kind of a situation myself via distance learning, I think that being on the receiving end of that instruction, it's really more beneficial to not only have that piece, but also to have a person in the room with the students right there on site where mm-hmm. they could actually ask the questions, discuss, and it's often a lot more
powerful.
Yeah, definitely.
Sure. Okay, and before we end this particular part of the program, I do want to touch upon the benefits to society. A person gets a GED and what happens?
Well, the whole thought would be that as part of a process of gaining employment, that again, the GED would be a market signal. And so it just allows this person to have an opportunity to be successful on outside the fence, mm-hmm. to be able to go out, perhaps get a job, perhaps get further job training. And once a person becomes employed, our research has shown that it impacts recidivism,
there are fewer crimes as a result of it, and it eases the tax-paid burden because they're out there paying taxes
instead of being a tax liability, they're paying taxes.
Our guest today has been Susan Lockwood. She is the Director of Juvenile Education for a state in the Midwest, but in her capacity today, she is the President of the Council of State Directors, again, at the Correctional Education Association Conference here in Charleston, West Virginia. Please have yourselves a very, very pleasant day. From the Correctional Education Association Conference in Charleston, West Virginia, I'm really pleased to have William Byers by our microphones. He's the superintendent of the Arkansas Correctional School System. He's in charge of the whole shebang. He's on the board of the Correctional Education System or Correctional Education Association, and is also regional director with the Correctional Education Association. And one of the things that Superintendent Byers was talking about was the fact that he has a 25% reduction in the rate of recidivism for those people who obtain GEDs. Am I right?
That is correct, yes.
Well, that's incredible. A 25% reduction. You know, most of the research on reentry programs will basically give 10 to 20%. 20% seems to be on the outer reaches of the reduction of recidivism. You're doing 25%. Yeah. Now, why is that?
Well, we have a very successful program. Number one, we require everyone who comes in the Department of Correction who does not have a high school diploma or GED to attend school while they're incarcerated. Also, I might add that the Board of Correction is also our school board, mm-hmm. and they are very supportive of our program. Education, they place a high priority on education. The teachers know that. The students know that. The inmates know that. So I think that's one thing that contributes to the success. Not only that, but we find that those who get out not only recidivate at a lower level than those who don't earn a high school diploma or GED, but they also get a better paying job.
Right.
And they're more likely to have a job.
Right. And more likely to keep a job,
exactly,
probably.
Exactly. Well,
but, you know, the interesting thing is that we in the United States, we're having a struggle now with correctional education and with mm-hmm. reentry programs and vocational educational programs. There are some states that are giving more money towards it and some states that are cutting it out because of their budget situation. The states are in a dire budget situation. What do you say to citizens, somebody sitting out there, somebody from the governor's office, somebody from the PTA, to convince them that correctional education is worthwhile, that it's in the average citizen's best interest to do this?
You know, I don't care what studies you look at. You can look at them from Free World, from the prison situation. The bottom line is education helps.
Mm-hmm.
It helps society. If you look at populations, the more educated the populace is, the higher the level of income, and that's true of the general population. It's also true of the inmate population.
Mm-hmm.
The more educated they are, the better they'll behave in prison, the more likely they'll get out and stay out. So it's beneficial to society if individuals can get an education while they're incarcerated.
You know, being a correctional officer is one of the toughest, most dangerous jobs on the face of
the
earth. These programs, this is very rarely ever discussed, the fact that these programs keep prisons peaceful.
Yes. You know, we deal with the 21 wardens around the state in Arkansas. And when they will tell you that they want education in their unit,
mm-hmm.
because it, not only does it provide something for the inmates to do, but it provides something positive for
sure.
them to do.
Sure. You want to have problems, give them nothing to do. Let them play basketball. Let them sit in their bunks with you. That's a dangerous prison. If you have programs in the prison, that's a safe, sane prison.
Plus, they're around educators. They're around educated people
right.
who mentor them and,
right.
and affect them in a positive way just by being around them.
How many people do you graduate a year from the GED program? I was very impressed by that.
In the state of Arkansas, we have over 1,000 inmates a year to earn their GED, and that compares to the inmate population in Arkansas is about 15,000.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a high participation, and we have a lot of people who walk out with a GED.
Now, we use the word recidivism rather loosely. What we're talking about is fewer people being mugged, fewer people being
right.
victims of crime because inmates get GED programs, they go on to live, they have the chance to live a more successful life, make more money, to be in that job longer, which translates into fewer crimes, which translates into individuals paying taxes and not being a tax burden.
And you know, that's something you can't measure. We say that they're taxpayers instead of being a tax burden, but also you can't measure somebody not being mugged
mm-hmm.
or somebody
exactly.
not being raped. That's one of the benefits that you can't put a figure on.
Well, that will be the final word from you. William Breyers, B-Y-E-R-E-S, William Breyers. He is the superintendent of the Arkansas Correctional School System. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Public safety.
Thank you.
Association Conference in Charleston, West Virginia. And at our microphones today is a person with a really unique last name, Denise Justice. She is CEA past president. She is a school superintendent, and I love all the superintendents that we're interviewing today for a correctional system somewhere in the United States. She received the President's Award today from the Correctional Education Association. And I asked somebody as to why she got the award. It was for a relentless pursuit or advocacy for correctional education. So I figured she'd be the right person to ask, Denise, why in the name of God do we do correctional education? A lot of people are out there. There's a lot of other priorities. There's the elderly. There are people out of work. I mean, there are a lot of issues in the United States today. Why should anybody care about correctional education?
There are a lot of issues in the United States, and we are clear about that. But when we have an incarcerated person in the United States, they are about 99.9% sure that they are going to get released at some point in time.
At some point in time.
Very few people go to prison and never, ever come out again. And when they do come out, they don't move far away from each one of us. They're in our neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. They're 5 minutes away from us. They're next door, wherever the case may be. Mm-hmm. They're going to come home. Many of them were incarcerated because they did not have the skills, educational skills, employment skills, in order to be able to be a tax-paying citizen.
The research says that we interact with people caught up in the criminal justice system every single day. Whether we go to the restaurant, whether we go to the auto store, whether we go to the tire store, whether we go, it doesn't matter. We are encountering individuals who have been caught up in the criminal justice system every single day. So if they're constantly around us, doesn't it make sense to be sure that when they come out of the prison system, they're as best prepared as they possibly can be to live a productive life?
Absolutely, because it does save us money. If they can come out and get a job and pay taxes and stay out of the criminal justice system, because that costs taxpayers a lot of money,
sure,
too, then we are actually saving ourselves money. Mm-hmm. We also, you need to think about, do you want your neighbor to have some skills to be able to get a job and pay those taxes, mm-hmm, or do you want to force them into a situation where all they can do is go out and cause another crime?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the crime is robbing your house, mm-hmm, taking your VCR, your TV.
So what we're talking about is lessening the crime rate for individuals listening to this program. They become safer because of correctional education programs.
Absolutely. You can look at any recidivism study that you want to. And if you don't know, recidivism is basically the rate at which people come back to prison or come back into the justice field. And you can look and see, no matter what study is done, it tells you that people who are involved in education or getting employable skills are going to be less likely, at whatever rate, there are different rates, you know, 10, 20, 30% differentials, but whatever it is, education makes them less likely to come back to prison.
Well, the guest before you, William Byers, the superintendent of the Arkansas Correctional School, mm-hmm, system, I mean, he claimed a 25% reduction. That's large. I mean, in a, mm-hmm, world where you're happy if you get 7%, mm-hmm, you're satisfied if you get 10%, and you're ecstatic if you, mm-hmm, get 20%, my heavens, 25%, mm-hmm, is a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you have, you know, 700,000 people come home every year in this country from prison, 25%, mm-hmm, of that lopped off, 25% of these people going on to be taxpayers instead of tax burdens,
mm-hmm,
that saves states millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in the long run in terms of construction costs, in terms of operating costs. It saves taxpayers a lot of money.
Absolutely. We found in the 80s, a lot of states got into prison building booms. They tried to build themselves out of prison overcrowding. And what we discovered was it was almost that self-fulfilling prophecy. If you build it, they will come. So we were building, you know, double and triple the number of prisons maybe we had in our state. And instead of getting down to 100% capacity in our facilities, we still found ourselves 125%, 150%, mm-hmm, 200% over capacity.
Regardless of how many prisons.
Regardless of how many prisons.
Right.
Absolutely. And so now we are looking more at the fact that what we need to do is to start the day that people come into our system and to start planning for their reentry, looking at getting them their GED if they have not completed a GED or a diploma, looking at getting them career tech skills and employability skills so that they can go out dealing with their addictions, dealing with their anger, issues of child abuse and all of those areas, and getting them ready to go back out on the street, getting them to know what linkages are out out there that can help them whatever area they needed
okay,
to stay out.
Okay, so a quick
out.
Answer on this one, because we need a quick answer. We're just about out of time. So the Correctional Education Association is designed to advocate that throughout the country, is to bring like-minded people. There are over 500 people at this mm-hmm. conference today. Mm-hmm. And over the course of the next couple of days, that's a large gathering, mm-hmm. especially in these economic times. So everybody's coming together to do what?
Everyone's coming together, particularly at our international conferences, is to come together to share problems that you're having, to come up with solutions, share solutions you maybe came up with at home, to find materials and resources that we can use because of budgetary cuts.
Ladies and gentlemen, my guest today has been Denise Justice. She is the Correctional Education Association past president. She's the superintendent of a correctional school system for a state and the award recipient today for the President's Award at the Correctional Education Association Conference. Please have yourselves a very, very pleasant day. This is DC Public Safety. I continue to be your host, Len Sipes, as we broadcast from the Correctional Education Association Conference in Charleston, West Virginia. Really have a lot of pleasure in reintroducing, because he's been to our microphones before, Steve Stewart. He is the Executive Director of Correctional Education Association. Steve, welcome back to DC Public Safety.
Thank you for having me again.
You know, it's a really interesting conference. Again, Tim and I have been to conferences. Tim Barnes and I have been to correctional conferences throughout the country. We've been to government conferences throughout the country, dealing with social media, and this is by far one of the largest conferences I've seen. You have well over 500 people in attendance.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been very lucky. West Virginia is terrifically supportive of correctional education, and people are bringing themselves together. And there is a tough time. I think it's actually drawing us together rather than pulling us apart and pulling us down.
Well, it is a tough time, and I do want to emphasize that this is a national conference, not necessarily a West Virginia conference. You have people from all over the country. You have people who have a couple people from around the world. And, you know, education programs in correctional facilities, correctional systems throughout the country, they're hurting. California sliced out the entire education program. You have different states that are cutting back significantly. So what you're going to do for me today is to put it in perspective. Where are we in terms of correctional education in the United States, whether it's GED programs, whether it's vocational programs? Where are we? Are we gaining? A lot of states are saying, hey, the way to reduce recidivism and control our costs is to put more programs on the table. Some states are saying, I'm sorry, we can't afford it. We're in a budget jam. Where are we? Put it in perspective for me.
On a national level, we're losing. We just lost we lost all the post-secondary money that we had from the federal government. $17.2 million was going out to the states on a formula basis. Mm-hmm. That's gone. Not likely to be getting that back anytime soon. Some of the states still support post-secondary education, vocational primarily, but with credits through state funding of various mm-hmm. sorts, or some inmates actually pay their own way if their families can afford it. So we lost that. GED, we're hanging in there, but we have a whole new challenge, because GED is going on computer. Mm-hmm. And within 2 years, it'll be computer-based. So that's going to present a real problem financially for a lot of systems trying to retool.
Right. So
adult basic education, GED, it's holding in there, but we're trying to figure out how we're going to meet this GED challenge. Vocational education, probably losing there too. The Perkins Act, which has been around for decades, is being severely cut. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that money would go into corrections as well as into the community. Vocational programs are being cut with that. That's mm-hmm. So I think generally speaking, in just about every state, we're having some real stress.
Why you have such a good turnout at the conference, though? I mean, I see a lot of enthusiasm, and the people that I'm talking to today certainly aren't down in the mouth. They are enthusiastic about what it is they do. They're hopeful about what it is they do. They see the value in terms of what it is they do. So there's a dichotomy here. On one side, I agree with you that we are struggling in terms of maintaining the number of programs and the quality of programs. But on the flip side is the enthusiasm I see from the membership of the Correctional Education Association. They know the value and they want to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's kind of descriptive of our membership to see that kind of enthusiasm. They're used to working in tough circumstances. They're used to working with people who nobody else wants to work with, mm-hmm. who have given up on them. So when problems come along, they can gripe and groan just like everybody else, and some of them just give up and shake their heads and wring their hands, but I think most of the people respond accordingly. Well, we don't have much to begin with. Let's figure out how we can do it a different way. Let's see if we can find some more resources. Let's see if we
can. Is there a different way of doing it?
Well, we're trying to see what different ways can be done. I mean, with the GED, for example, we're going to work very closely with the GED Testing Service, which is now owned jointly by GED Testing, American Council on Education, and Pearson View, which is a company that does a lot of vocational assessment. So we're going to see there might be all ways to deliver things a little bit differently. As CEA, one of the things we do is we train teachers to train inmates to be tutors. And what started out as a kind of collaboration between Maryland and Ohio ideas, concept of tutor training, we put into a national program. We've got like six states now that we've gone in. We've trained anywhere from 30 to 80 teachers at a time in three-day seminars how to train inmates to be their aides.
Mm-hmm.
And where most states will allow inmates to act as aides. In Ohio, we're in the last 5 years or so, I think it is, they've trained over 3,500 inmates who in turn work with a teacher and tutor others in a very in the classroom, so they're not running around in some disorganized fashion. It's a,
right.
It's a little army, so to speak. Louisiana, they're about 3 years into this. They've trained over 500 inmates. In fact, the job is one of the best in the system.
Mm-hmm.
The inmates have to be highly qualified to do it,
right.
And then they get some special privileges. They might get sent to another institution.
So we really are squeezing that rock for blood. We're doing it. We're being as innovative as possible. But one of the other question I asked another person at our microphones this afternoon was, why can't you have a person centrally located somewhere in the United States teaching inmates anyplace else in the United States through long-distance learning?
Well, you could possibly do that with some of the folks. I mean, a lot of folks do things online, for example. But I dare say, because I teach online for the University of Maryland University College, and it's an open university. And some students have a great deal of difficulty because of lack of sufficient writing skills, reading skills, etc. They are much better served with some face-to-face assistance, whether it's a mentor or hopefully a teacher. But people need assistance who have a lot of severe deficits, and the correctional population typically,
is filled with people who have severe deficits when it comes to education.
All kinds of deficits, yeah, and sure. Complications. So,
but before we end the program, and we're in our final minute of the program, I do want to get around to the results, because people listen to this program and they're going to say to themselves, "Okay, you're the executive director of the Correctional Education Association. Sorry, Mr. Executive Director, we've got elderly people, we've got school kids to take care of, we have so many people unemployed, and now you want me to give money and support to this whole concept of correctional education." And to these people, you're going to respond how?
Well, if I would talk to a group of elderly people, I think I could get them to understand the situation. Things are tough, and what are you going to do? Why can't you reach out to other folks who are in bad situations? What is it about us that we in the United States that we tend to just incarcerate somebody and want to throw away the key? Why isn't the concept of community, of helping each other, people who are down, who are quite capable if they get the right kind of assistance. Why do we want to do that?
But there are tangible benefits to taxpayers. They're not going to be, their chances of being mugged, their chances of their house being burglarized are significantly reduced if these individuals are trained in prison.
Right. But the reason I bring up this other issue is because we've made that argument for years. The reduction of recidivism, we had done one of the significant studies in the field. And that really caught the attention of politicians. But right now, all bets are off. You see what's happening in states and at the national level. They're not looking at research in any area. They're cutting programs, they're cutting this, cutting that. So I'm trying to see if we can appeal a little more to people's consciences, because there is a big conscience in the United States. It's one of the biggest givers in the world in terms of charity and in terms of helping folks. And so we've got to take a little bit different tact, because right now nobody cares about the recidivism study. So we need to create some sympathy on a humanistic level. And so that's one of the reasons why I think social media, we need to take a good look at it and see how we can reach people, not just in their dollar, in their pocketbook, but their own feelings about helping others.
Steve, that you give the final word, or you have the final word. Steve Stewart, the executive director of the Correctional Education Association, at their annual conference in Charleston, West Virginia. Ladies and gentlemen, please have yourselves a very pleasant day. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. We continue to broadcast from the Correctional Education Conference here in Charleston, West Virginia. Again, well over 500 individuals from all over the country, some people from all over the world, looking at this whole concept of correctional education, looking at correctional programs, looking at reentry programs, looking at what makes a difference in terms of the impact of how people come out of prison. Are they successful? What programs are they engaged in? What programs did they participate in, what programs are successful, what programs aren't successful. That's the point of the Correctional Education Conference. And before our microphones, we're going to continue this discussion on research. Cindy Borden, she is with a private company, and the private company was under contract to the Correctional Education Association to do some research. Now, needless to say, we can't endorse a private company, but these are the people who are in charge of the research. Cindy Borden, she is with the North Star Correctional Educational Services. They are correctional education consultants. And the interesting thing here is that what we're talking about is post-secondary education, i.e. college, a four-year piece of research that shows that one-third after they're done, a two-year period, one-third are enrolled in college and three-quarters are employed. So those are pretty significant findings. Cindy, let's talk about this. Now, how did you end up with this contract with the Correctional Education Association?
CEA asked us to find a funding source and then to recruit states, start out with six states to participate in this research, who were willing to randomly assign students into either the intervention, which was a distance learning program, or a control situation, which was basically business as usual. Their local community colleges or correspondence work. So we found the funding source in the Institute of Education Sciences with the U.S. Department of Ed, and then they asked us to conduct the field research.
Now, both of you and you're the other person from your company, you're former principals or superintendents. What were you?
We were former teachers then principals in the prison system.
So
yes.
You have a lot of experience in terms of this. You have hands-on experience. Now, I do want to explain for our audience that random assignment is the gold standard for research. It's when prisons were. We're talking about 44 prisons, right?
In 44 states? Prisons in seven states, that's
okay.
Right.
Okay, and so half were given this program and half were not, and it happened by chance. So in other words, there's no research bias.
That's right. They were randomly assigned by computer-generated, and half were given the distance learning intervention. The other half continued business as usual.
Okay, so that is the gold standard. So tell me about this. So you had this existed for how long, and post-secondary education is a collegiate program, as a college program?
Yes, it was the first 2 years of academic college, so basically freshman and sophomore year core courses, gen ed courses. We went out to the prisons for 3 years, twice a year. We did pre-testing of the students in the fall and post-testing in the spring for 3 years running. We conducted focus groups, and we interviewed site coordinators and students. We gave the CAP critical thinking exam to all the students in the fall and then post-tested them in the spring.
Now, believe me, I understand how controversial this is from a public relations point of view. When I was with the state of Maryland, I used to do press releases about collegiate people graduating from collegiate programs, and I got quite a bit of pushback from citizens. So there is a concern. People asked me quite bluntly, I can't afford to send my child to college, so this guy goes out and commits a violent crime and he gets a free college education. Where's the fairness in that? One of the things that I would say in return was that the individuals involved in collegiate programs had the lowest rates of recidivism. That means out of all the things that you could do within a correctional setting, these individuals committed fewer crimes fewer crimes than any other group of individuals and cost taxpayers less money than any other group of individuals. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. An investment in college education for these students brings a benefit, a cost benefit to the taxpayer that is tremendous. We invest in their college education while they're incarcerated, and the recidivism rate drops significantly for these people. We have discovered in the course of this study that even exposure to a single college course or a single semester of college courses makes a tremendous difference in their decisions once they get out.
Right, but I mean, in this case, what I'm asking is that this program, correctional, the post-secondary collegiate programs in the prison settings, are more effective than any other program I'm aware of. That's the question.
They are very effective. Vocational training is also very effective for a separate type of person. But for those who are interested in academic education, yes, college, straight up college is tremendously effective.
And I do want to point out the effects. Now, we're talking about 2 years out, but that 2 year cohort could be people out for 2 years or people just entering the cohort and being out for a couple months.
That's right.
So when you measured this at the 2 year period for people out for an entire period of 2 years, and just entering that cohort for a couple months, you found that one third were enrolled in college and three quarters are employed.
That's right.
Now, that's amazing. I mean, those sort of statistics are beyond comprehension. I mean, that's pretty much the best piece of research or the best research findings I've ever heard of.
It's much higher than we anticipated. We didn't expect it to be that high. We were surprised at what that exposure to college produced in their post-release statistics.
And you would say to the average individual out there who has mixed feelings about this that these findings trump just about every other finding that we've encountered, or what do you say to that person?
To the one who says, I'm paying for my kids' college, why should the convicts get it for free?
Right.
The investment in these people pays off to our communities. What I say to people who say that directly to me is that these people are getting out of prison and they're going to move next to you and they're going to move next to your children.
Or they're going to be a 5-minute drive.
Or they're going to be a 5-minute drive. And who do you want there? Do you want someone who has had some exposure to college, who has actually earned a college degree, or someone who did nothing with his time while he was incarcerated and then was released and moved in next to your children?
Sydney Borden, you have the final word. Ladies and gentlemen, we're broadcasting from the Correctional Education Conference here in Charleston, West Virginia. Cindy is with a private company. Again, we can't endorse private companies, but she was a contractor to the Correctional Education Association to conduct this research. North Star Correctional Educational Services at northstarcorrectional.com. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. We appreciate your time and effort and listening, and look forward next time to another program on the state of the criminal justice system in America. Have yourselves a very pleasant day.